think it was a legend, turns out it was a liability. This is AFIT Podcast, where we share addiction war stories and tales of recovery against the odds from with heroes from around the world. I'm Megara, an alcoholic dominatrix, sober for 15 months, and my drunken hobbies included getting really steaming at a party and bonding with my first long-term boyfriend over shaving a wee guy's eyebrow off, because we had rules at parties. And if you fell asleep with your shoes on, it meant we could do whatever the fuck we wanted to you. Did you have rules like that at parties?
If we did, I was blacked out, and I was like, I've woke up with dicks drawn on me and everything, and my mum like saw.
Were you the one that fell asleep?
I'm the one that fell asleep. And I went to the shops after a party once, and I missed one of the dicks that were drawn on me. Like, I forgot to wash it off, and a guy was staring at me, and mum was like, "Oh well, you know, at least you woke up with dicks on you, not in you." And I was like, the humour man. I've been the person that did the real wrong.
Well, I was at a party once, and there was a girl who, she was really nice. Her name was Claire. Sorry, Claire. But she got really drunk, fell asleep at the party, and she fell asleep with her shoes on. So fair game. And so someone removed one of her shoes and threw it out the window. And someone else removed another one of her shoes and pished in it and put it in the freezer. So she had to wait for her shoe to defrost to go home.
You have to leave that in the sink or something.
I mean, she just took it out and like cried for a bit.
Oh man.
I was like, oh well, you shouldn't have fell asleep. I was such a cunt. Like, you just didn't want, if I was at a party, you didn't want to fall asleep.
The brutality of it all.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, on that dire note, I'm Dana, and by the time you hear this, I will be a year sober, but as it stands, I am 11 months, and I don't even know what day it is. I'm some amount of time sober, and my drunken hobbies included reliving my most horrible traumas, but refusing to take the necessary steps to recover from them, sensibly.
You're 353 days sober.
That's good math.
365 in a year, isn't there?
Thanks.
Is it Friday and Sunday is my year?
So we're just sitting here ignoring the elephant in the room.
Oh yes, of course. So we are joined by.
Hi, I'm James. I'm an alcoholic. I'm 2.5 years AFIT, and one of my drunken hobbies included me going out on a night out in town, meeting some random lass, and ending up with her name tattooed on my body.
That night.
A few
that
times
fucking
I
night.
Have, a few times.
A few how many times has this happened?
Three. The fourth. There would have been a fourth time, but the fourth time the tattooist would not tattoo me because I was off my face.
I actually kind of love the instant commitment though with that.
Yeah, like right away, like fuck it, let's do it.
I can't wait to hear about your journey, man. This is going to be epic.
Yeah.
I've never heard of something so instantly fucking... That's cool. I like that. I like that. I can identify with that.
So today...
I see it and I want it.
We'll be chatting to James, and, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, then chances are you're kind of looking to get clean, looking to get sober, and it's been a hot minute. It's been a hot minute since we've done a podcast, but if you're new... Or if you're still coming about for a while, we want to hear more about you guys. So feel free to tweet us, messages. We just want to hear how you're all doing, to be honest. See where you're at and what we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to know all your stories.
What's the tea?
We want more one-line war stories. Give us some of that.
What the fuck? Come on.
Give me some of that shit. Such shit that I can relate to, so I don't feel so bad.
The abyss
help me.
Is so dark.
Well, let's get fucking stuck in about things. James... I want to know what your life was like before all of this stuff started taking hold.
I was pretty privileged growing up, really. I had a good upbringing in that, like, good home, like, alcoholism and stuff like that wasn't really about. But, like, I always remember not feeling part of my family and stuff like that. I was, like, the odd one out, always feeling a bit fucked up, like, in any situation. Possible, when it kind of, that was like my youth.
Yeah.
I played football and stuff, but it was more like just total awkwardness in situations. I was quite shut down as a child in my early years and stuff, and that's all it was really like until I picked up the drink.
Were you cool at school? You seem like you would be cool
at
school.
I had loads of pals in that eye, like I had loads of friends, I was quite popular and shit, but it was I'd rather be on my own, like, at all times.
Yeah, I was a total loner at school. Like, I had good pattern in that, 'cause because it stopped me getting my cunt kicked in. I was definitely a fucking loner, so I get that. I totally get that. So what? How old were you when you first started drinking?
Yeah, it was. I can't remember exactly, but I was like 8 or 9. Like, I was pretty young.
What? That's wild. How did you get hold of it?
I just remember it was at, a party, and it was like a family gathering, sort of like that sort of shit. And it was like a family friend, like my mum and dad's, and he just handed me, I think it was a shandy at first, then it was like Grolsch and shit like that. And I just remember just drinking it. I never ever thought anything. I didn't know what it was, I don't think. I just seen everybody at it, so I was like,
did you like the taste of it?
No.
No, I never liked the taste of it either.
Yeah, it was horrendous.
You remember the cans of shandy you used to be able to get in the shop? Was it base shandy or something, or Bass? Yeah. I used to get that just on the regular off my parents.
Is a shandy like beer and lemonade?
Aye.
It's like a watered down version of beer. I would
get it instead of a can of Coke. But it was just normal. Yeah. Like, it wasn't anything out of the ordinary for us, but yeah, I used to just get handed cans of shandy. What the fuck?
Nice.
Yeah, it's just totally fucking brought that memory back there, and I can taste it and all that.
That is barking.
But yeah, I liked it when I was younger. I felt like I'd grown up and drink shandy. You know what I mean?
That's the thing, like, you kind of see it, you see adults doing it, and at first you kind of see the social aspect of it, like it's a bonding activity. Mm. Like, I never really grew up around drink, like, full stop. No alcohol was involved in my upbringing. So I would see it on TV, but there's like in a very stylized way, you know, and I fucking love style. So it sells it to you. But, you know, if you didn't have alcohol kind of growing up, was it like, did your parents like socially drink or, you know, how?
It was like, I'd only ever see like my mum and my dad drinking like at family occasions and stuff like that. Like if somebody's birthday, like it wasn't readily available, like in the house, other family members, but in my house, it wasn't. It was like, mum and dad didn't smoke, didn't really drink, no drugs, shit like that. It was like, we were vanilla.
So in school, you know, you said you were popular, but you preferred to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that? Were you just kind of naturally inclined to be kicking about yourself, or did you not like the pressure of being popular? Like, why was that? I think that's interesting.
Yeah, it was more like, it's hard to explain. It was just always within me. I always preferred to be by myself. Like, even like, I had really good friends and stuff, and like people, like I was in a football team and around a lot of boys, and I never felt right. Like, I couldn't, it felt like I just didn't belong in whatever situation. It was like total awkwardness inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ended like, I would be with my pals, and then I'd like quietly fuck off.
Yeah.
So nobody noticed, and then they'd be like where is he? And then they'd find me in a fucking field or a bush somewhere.
Getting tattoos. Well, that reminds me a wee bit of, I heard a line in a play that I went to see, and it really resonated with me. And it was a play called The Libertine.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy he does this big monologue at the start, and he says, he's talking to the audience, basically addressing the audience, and he's like, do not love me, but do not ignore me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that fucking describes my life. Like, I want the attention, but I don't want the attention.
Yeah.
Like, I want everybody to get around me, but not close to me.
Yeah.
Like, so that kind of, like, I want to be left alone, but I also don't want anybody to fuck off. So it's like, I know what you mean. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but I know exactly how you felt. Like, that's fucking, yeah. I think that's quite common though, isn't it, amongst us?
Yeah, I think
fucking
so.
Fucking mad heads. Like,
yeah, leave me alone.
Aye.
Fuck.
So you had your first drink at 8 or 9, and you didn't like the taste of it, we know that much. Was there anything about it that did sort of take you back towards it, or was it just like the social nonsense when you got older? Like, tell us how that kind of developed from like your first drink into your teen years. What was that like?
I kind of remember like what the, like, I hear people when they say like they can remember their first drink and stuff, and like what it did for you, I kind of remember. But like, what I do know is that from that point on, anytime there was alcohol available, I was on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then I would start stealing cans or whatever, like, whatever was there. I didn't give a fuck, like walking about hoosies and picking up like the dregs of a can somewhere and just like necking it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that was like that until, like, when I got to about, like, 10, 11, that's when things, like, really ramped up, like, with more so on the drug side. But Like, it was, I would just always chase drink for that first time. Like, when it was there, I was on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, like, I remember, like, the older I got, it would just, like, because I'm quite shy the day. And mm-hmm. that was, like, that was my, I always remember feeling quite shy and introvert and stuff, and the drink just totally, like, brought me out of my shell. Like, I could talk to people, I could, like, I'd become the, like, the class clown,
yeah.
for instance, and a total joker, and, like, it was, like, for the first, like, my early teens, it was just, like fun and games, really, for a while to that point, and then it got pretty dark pretty quick.
What would you say, kind of, like, did other people respond well to your drinking? Like, I know that, Megara, you sometimes say, oh, people say you're a real buzz when you drink. Like, literally nobody complimented me on my drinking ever. So, like, you know, did other people have a perception of...
Like, I still, to this day, I'm still fucking great fun when I drink. I just don't. Because it's not the fact that I'm not fun. It's yeah. just the fact that when everybody goes home, I want to kill myself.
Yeah.
So, that's not fun. Like, I'm fun for everyone else, but I'm not fun for me.
For yourself, yeah.
So...
Yeah.
What were you like?
I like the early years, like I said, probably up until I was maybe 15, it was all laugh. Like, I was like, folk loved it. Like, because I'd do mad shit, like shitting in folks' kettles and stuff. And, like,
shitting somebody.
Aye, like, that numerous the occasions.
Stuff I've only ever heard that as a legendary yeah. story. You've yeah. actually
aye,
done
shat
it.
Shitting somebody's kettle. I did the. Where was I? It was somewhere near North Berwick, like when I was dead, like, I must have been about 14.
Did you get caught?
No.
No?
Just waited for the next game morning until folk were starting to make coffees and shit.
I know somebody that that used to come to the parties that we used to hang about in, like, where the lassie get her shoe pished in, but he used to do a poo in somebody's shoe before he left.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Every single yeah. time. I'm like, that's fucking disgusting.
I
man.
Wouldn't do it every time, but there'd be the odd occasion where I'd be like, fuck, where's the kettle? And just take it for there.
That is a legend.
Never told anybody
his...
that before. Like, so people from my youth will be hanging and remember that dodgy coffee. Yeah.
That's brutal.
You'd need to throw it out. You couldn't. There's no salvaging that. So.
Well, they must have found, like, their parents must have found, like, shit in a kettle at one point. But
for sure.
That went down and never ever came back to, like,
you came home and there's just
like
a
that.
New kettle. Why is there a new kettle?
nobody would think to look in the
no.
kettle, though.
I don't even look at a kettle when I'm filling it up. I just fill it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But surely you'd open the top and you'd be like, it's fucking, you fart.
Yeah. Yeah, like, they must have smelled something at one point, so, like, but it never ever came back to,
I've heard,
like,
about people shitting in somebody's cistern.
Oh, okay.
So every time you flush the toilet, mer jobby water comes out.
Oh my god.
Oh yes.
I know.
No, I never
You've
thought
missed
of
that one.
Yeah.
It's too late now.
Fuck.
Too late now, James.
Yeah.
Too late now. I mean, fuck. Is that something you can do sober? I don't know.
You probably could, but I don't think I'd feel right with it the day.
No, I don't.
I'd be all like guilt and remorse.
I'd meet you again my step four, I think.
That, definitely. Yeah,
that is so
there.
Funny.
A moral inventory.
That's bold. That's fucking bold.
Imagine if you need to tell somebody that. Like, fucking.
Making amends for your kettle.
Fucking admitting that to some kind.
Amazing.
Shatting somebody's sister.
Yeah, maybe one day.
So you said that, like, you know, when you got to, like, was it age 15, and, like, things started to get pretty dark pretty quickly. Is that something you can develop on?
It was by the time I was 15, like, my experience was, like, drink was the first and the last thing I ever touched, but it was, like, the drugs was, like, for, like, the age of 10, 11, like, until I was 30, and by the time I was 15 as well, I was, like, it was early days, like, shit, like, buzzing deodorant, sniffing speed, like, smoking weed. Then it was about 15, 16, and, like, the cocaine came in, and I found them, instead of being the life and soul of the party, I then became, like, an aggressive, I was an animal. Like, I was an animal. I would lash out at people. It just turned, like, really quick. Like, I became dead dark, right, and I carried that with me until I stopped, but it would get worse and worse over the years. But it was always, in the early days when I was in that age, it was like punching people in the face and stuff, and like walking up to folk and just scalping them across the face.
Mm.
Like, for no reason other than my he'd help me do that.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking
that's what cats do.
Yeah.
I watched my cats the other day, and they were sitting doing nothing, and the other, like, one of my cats just gave the other cat a fucking clip in the face.
Aye, for no reason.
No reason.
Good cat, aye.
Aye. they can't even blame the drink either.
You know, I remember there was a thing going about when I was about that age. It was like, I think they called it happy slaps or something like that. Like,
aye,
it was going,
and I remember
you just used
that.
To walk up to folks sleeping, or like just somebody sitting on a chair and you'd like come from behind them and like wallop them right in the face.
They were rough. Like when I was in school, like or around that age, a happy slap was to be slapped but also be filmed. So
okay.
I was happy slapped numerous times in school, and it was filmed as well. And these were like grown ass guys that were so much bigger than me that
fuck's
used to
sake.
Do it to me. And so, like, I understand like that impulse though. Like, you know, intrusive thoughts.
Oh mm-hmm. yeah.
Like, it's like, imagine if I just threw that glass of water off my gara for no fucking reason. Like, that's what it's like. That was what it was like in the end for me to drink. I'm like, I'm gonna pour my pint all over these guys' dinner.
Yeah.
For no reason, and I've done that, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
like buzzing deodorant,
mm-hmm.
and I've actually been thinking about that this week, because from what I knew of it, like I'm pretty sheltered from that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
But it's like it seems like a generational thing. I don't know if I'm just, you know, but I don't know anybody doing it now. But I thought that you could just die if you did it even once. Was there that kind of risk when you're doing that? Like,
I just remember, like I remember my experience where. Buzzing deodorant was, I was dogging school one day, I went to one of my mate's houses, and I just walked into the house and he was upstairs in his bed, like, lying back, and he just handed me this tin of deodorant with a sock on the top of it. And I never ever thought, like, at one point, like, don't fucking do this. So I just went, what'd you do? I went, hold it down and just breathe it in. And it was, like, intense, like, it's like a, it goes straight, it's like a humming noise in your head constantly. It's no good for you, like, it is not good. I think I'd done it for about 6 months, and I remember doing it because I patched him in the end because he was not doing it the way I wanted him to do it.
Yeah,
so
right.
Then I'd go back to my house, and I remember one day lying in my bed. It was like it was like an outer body experience. So I was obviously sleeping. It was a dream. I don't know, but I remember this was like 11-year-old. I was lying there, and like I said, I was watching something stupid like Neighbours or something on the telly, like some pish.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, I don't know if I fell asleep or whatever, but the next thing I know, it's like I'm looking down at myself from the ceiling. I can't see myself up there, but I can see myself lying on my bed. And I just remember, like, it was like thoughts of, like, fuck, I'm dead. Like, I thought I was dead, and I was like, oh no. And then I just woke up, went to the bathroom, like, splashed water in my face, and I never touched it again. Like, it freaked me
oh,
the fuck out.
Oh man, fuck. That's like, is it like. Poppers then?
No, you don't get out of body experience with poppers. Like,
just make your face.
I just mean like that humming. Like I imagine it to be sort of like.
It was like wom 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 constantly.
So I've buzzed air duster and it was like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's rough. Like, don't do it. Fuck no.
I done a geographical to America, and
mm-hmm.
me and a bunch of U.S. Marines just sat with a can of air duster one night. Just buzzing it, because it doesn't come up in their drug test, so...
Ah, good idea, aye.
It makes your voice sound like somebody's hit the slow button on a tape.
I remember it would, like, deepen my voice quite a bit at that age as well. Like, it would, like, deepen it, but it would just, like... It just put me on my back.
Ah, it's
and
bad.
It was like a cabbage.
So you never touched that again, but
no.
You went on to different substances, around that time?
Aye, smoking weed, snorting speed... yeah, for a couple of years then it was just like coke and mushrooms and shit for a few years, and yeah, and then it went on.
Mushrooms is one that I've never done, but I've done coke, I've done speed. I used to smoke a power of hash.
Yeah.
We had a wee hidey bit in Alexandra Park,
mm-hmm.
and we used to go in there and we'd just sit and do buckets.
Yeah.
And then when the bucket was absolutely manky, we'd scrape the oils off and do like oil joints and stuff, and like anything we could do. And there was a place in Hag Hill, I don't know if it's still there, but
mm-hmm.
there was a one certain house in Hag Hill that used to be able to go up the stair, and you'd put a fiver in the letterbox and a wee hand would come out and give you a fiver bit of hash.
Nice.
And
wow.
Then you'd run back down to the park again, like, yes, I got some. Aye, mad.
Yeah, I had a lot of, like, it was smoking like weed in parks and stuff myself, but the bonk, like the bucket water stuff, we used to, like, when it got to that point where it was like tar, like
uh-huh.
we just used to, like, well, it was mainly me. It would, like, I'd pick, like, the weakest person that I would see in the group and, like, make them drink it and shit.
Oh, I've seen
Damn.
That as well.
It's rough.
fuck that. Imagine having to drink the Manky bucket water.
Oh, it's like, it's disgusting. Like, I've never tried it, but it's like, fuck.
But do you know my instant thought right now, though? Do you get a buzz off it?
No, why?
That's how fucked my head is. Yeah. Like, do you get a buzz off it?
Well, I'm just thinking to myself, like, I'm looking at you and you're like the nicest thing ever, and I'm just imagining you making somebody drink bong water, and I'm like, I can't picture it.
Just slapping cunts.
Like, yeah, I can't picture, like, you know, that's the weird thing. I can't picture you doing that.
I believe today that the person who I'm are today was the person that I was before, like, I ever picked up alcohol and drugs, and like I have always been quite a calm person, but the drinking the drugs just turned me into, like, it was like Jekyll and Hyde. Like, total, completely. It was just like the
same
total opposite.
So what got you into the, like, the drugs and stuff? Because I know for me, I done coke and pills, because I done the pills because I was even merrier buzz on pills, because I used to hallucinate and people would be like, what is it you're seeing? And I'd tell them, and they'd just all fall about laughing, and I just thought this was hilarious. I mean, I'm sitting there hallucinating in a party. But I did coke because I wanted to keep my wits about me. Now, what I could have done is just drank less.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to do that. So I took coke so that I would be able to keep my wits about me, stay sober for longer, drink more.
Yeah.
And not get drunk, which is ridiculous, because it's just
it's just a waste.
It's just piling more stuff and more stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
But what about you? What got you into it?
What, the coke?
Aye.
Let's say, I think it was about 15, 16. I just remember it was another, like, somebody's family was away. I was sitting at my mate's house and we were just drinking, smoking weed and that. And one of my mates just put it was a grand bag, I didn't know at the time. I'd never seen cocaine until this point. Put it on the table, opened it up, and there was, like, fucking 6 of us in this house. And I'd never seen cocaine before. I'd never tried it. I didn't know anybody that had tried it. But I remember my first... like, my first thought was, like, that's not going to be enough. Because my experience with any other drug was, like, I used to, like, panic when I'd get down to, like, my last quarter.
Aye.
And I'd be like, fuck, like, what? Didn't matter what drug it was, or, like, the alcohol. And, like, if there was one bottle left, I'd be like, right, fuck me. Like, it's, like, 2 o'clock in the morning. What am I doing here? Like, how am I going to get? But I just remember, I think he was putting it wee fucking tiny... shitey lines, like I said, even back then I was like, what the fuck is that? And I pestered them after we done that bag for like an hour to tell me, like, who'd you get that off of? And he wouldn't tell me, and then he finally told me, because I was being that much of a fucking pain in the ass, that I then went and sourced it myself at that point.
I got to a stage where I couldn't enjoy a night out unless I knew I had coke or pills or drink.
100%, yeah.
I couldn't go out. I was a nightmare. And people would be like, oh, come on, we'll go and dance. And I'd be like, I need to find stuff first. Because if I don't find stuff, I'm not interested in you. I'm not interested in talking. I'm not interested definitely. In dancing. Like, and I couldn't understand why people just wanted to have a good time. And I'm like, no, I need all of these. And I'd be, then I'd get pills and I'd just fucking hallucinate all night. And I'd, like, there was a time where I was in Archaos. And there was these, like, green laser lights that were all kind of coming out, and it was like a big laser light show thing. And I was just standing under the stairs. And, you know, there was, like, stairs that went up and round.
Yeah.
And my pals came over and they were like, what, are you all right? Like, why are you standing under the stairs? Because everybody was, like, had their hands up in the air. I thought, and because of the green laser lights, I thought people were had dishes. You know those silver dishes that you get in the Chinese?
Yeah.
I thought people were flinging fried rice at me.
What?
Yeah.
So I just stood under the stairs so the rice wouldn't get in my hair. My pal that was just sense. Like, you're off your fucking head.
Yeah.
But that's where my mind used to go, just ridiculousness. And it's still funny, but it's just, I just don't want to do that anymore. Nope.
Yeah, fuck that.
I never really did drugs in a social sense.
Mm.
I only ever did it to, you know, work.
Yeah,
or I'd do it alone. And it's strange because it's like, MCAT was my vibe. We've discussed that before, like the trashiest of all fucking drugs, man. Like, I'm like a classy bitch, but then I'm like, I used to like MCAT, and everybody's like side eyeing me like, bitch. So that was my thing, but I struggled to kind of do that socially.
Yeah.
With other people, I just wasn't, I don't know what it was about it, but I got really, like, badly into it. Coke I just found to be more often than not, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't good enough. I was like, if I'm gonna take something, I want to almost die.
Of course.
So, or it's not worth my time.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd never find coke to be good enough. Ever.
I took MCAT a couple of times. One time that I did it, I ended up in a pub in Paisley, mm-hmm. and I was up dancing with my pal, and we were having a fucking great time. It was just such a fucking a banging day. Got taken home, don't really know why, got taken home, spewed into my duvet with such force that it came back and rebounded all over my face.
Yeah, nice.
And woke up the next day, and the guy that I was seeing at the time was like, you're a fucking embarrassment. And I was like, how? We just did a good night, sorry, yeah. I spewed. And he's like, a good night? A good fucking night? It was Sunday afternoon. People were having Sunday lunch with their families, and there was no music on. There was and I was up dancing. There was no fucking music on. So that was my experience with MCAT. It played music in my head for me and my pal to dance to.
That's wild. I actually considered myself to be sober, like, because I didn't really drink if I was taking MCAT, and I was a much better person, like, to be around. If I wasn't drinking, so I would just quite happily be doing MCAT. Like, there was one time it was maybe, I think, a similar situation, like a Sunday evening,
mm-hmm.
and it was in my pal's, like, because we had student halls, and it was basically just me up at, like, 5 a.m. on MCAT, like, throwing up on the grass, like, foam and blood, and I was always in my dressing gown, because I was always in my room studying, taking drugs, and, like, it was just known that I was kicking about in this, and I haven't even seen the Muppets. I had a Muppets dressing gown animal or something on it. Anyway. Yeah. So I was, like, in her room, and she'd fell asleep, and I'm just, like, taking MCAT, asking my pal about, like, British politics, and it is, like, 2 a.m, and I'm like, that's very interesting, can you tell me more about it? And, like, oh, it just fucking sums me up. Like, I loved the talking part of it,
mm-hmm.
and how I was able to still retain all that information and be, like, the person I could have been, or the person that I am sober now, but I had to take MCAT to do that. That was the weird thing. Yeah. I was never, like, outrageous on MCAT or anything. Well, outrageous. I was thrown up constantly. And in my hand, I was crossing the road one time. I was wearing Chanel and everything. I threw up white foam because I took dodgy MCAT. Threw up the MCAT into my hand because I'm a professional. And just flicked it onto the road.
Nice.
Wiped it down on something that was under my jacket. So... like, I had it finessed, man, and I actually just refused to remember the look on the driver's face.
Yeah.
When I was crossing the road, because he'll have seen it. He'll have fucking seen me throw up into my hand. But you, like, the claws, like, I don't know, man. Drugs are, like, a complicated one, because, you know, you kind of feel that vibe as well, where you take more drugs so that you could drink for longer.
Mm-hmm.
So the times I did drink, I was doing it to, you know, outdrink everybody else and not be the first one falling asleep with my fucking mouth open at a party.
Last woman standing was my fucking thing. Mm. I loved that. I also loved that it made me able to talk to people.
Of course.
But, you know, when you've got all that shit pent up when you're sober, the minute you put some drugs and some alcohol into me, I'm wanting to tell you everything about my whole entire life, and I want to overshare all of my trauma with strangers, and it's fucking... so annoying.
I suppose that's the thing about uppers.
People are like, nice to meet you, and I'm like, I was suicidal when I was 9. They're just like, what, get the fuck away from me.
I was totally like that. I was either like wanting to know everything about your life,
mm-hmm.
or you were gonna sit and listen to me talk about my cats, and I swear to god, if you fucking leave that chair, I'm following you. Like, there was a guy that tried to hit on me at a party once. He tried to give me he told me it was MCAT, and I fucking knew it wasn't MCAT. I knew it wasn't, and I was like, why are you offering me MCAT? Because you're lying to me. I don't know what you're trying to give me, but I'm not taking it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was doing that thing where, like, sometimes guys would pretend that they were interested in cats as a way of, like, getting in my pants. So I'd be like, oh, you're interested in cats? Well, I've got 6, so come and sit with me. And I don't even give a fuck about, like, my cats that much that I'd make a man sit there and listen to me for... half an hour, but I can see them dying inside, and that gave me great satisfaction. Like, you fucking dare pretend, like, oh, your parents had a cat back in the fucking day. Fuck you. Fuck every single one of you that pretended to like cats. That was so, cocaine isn't great for me because I'm very spiteful.
I can identify with that.
So, like, going on on to the next thing, like, you know, were there any particular sort of red flags for you? Like, I mentioned a few scenarios there that should have been glaring red flags for me in my active addiction, but I chose to ignore them. So were there any kind of, like, rock bottoms where you were like, oh, no?
My, there's hunters, but, like, I remember, like, it was just, like, my life, it was just, like, one disaster after another, really. But I remember even early ages, like, especially when I was getting, like, the love of my last year of school, I left when I was 16, and, like, it would always be, like, it was taking drugs, like, during the week, but you'd be out on a Friday night at somebody's house, like, drinking, and, like, I'd wake up, like, the next day, like, in a golf course, like, in a bunker, like, with fuck all on me, like, with boxers on, like, a bottle of whatever I had, nae keys, nae fuck all, nae phone, and then it was, like, it would get worse, like, I got older, and, like, I started waking up in police cells and shit like that, no got a clue why I got there. This was all before I was 20, like, I knew there was always something a bit fucked up with me. Mm-hmm. But I would never ever have said, oh, it's the drink. I just blamed everybody else for my shit.
It's funny how we're able to do that. I've said to you before, like, addicts and alcoholics are the most creative people I've ever met. And I'm in an arty industry, but there's nothing like an alcoholic trying to, you know, not take responsibility.
Of course.
Or or an addict, you know.
Yeah, it was always everybody's fault, whether it was, like, I would blame my mother, I would blame, like, a girlfriend, I would blame a friend. Like, if they would all do what I wanted them to do, I'll be fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a lot of shite, but that was, like, what I would say constantly.
Yeah, I used to blame my dad, I used to blame my mum, blamed my sister for a while. Every single boyfriend, it's all their fault.
Yeah.
We were talking about this last night, actually, Dana and I were saying, like, about how I just, like, I didn't have boyfriends, I had hostages.
Of course.
And we, like, I would always just tell everybody, I must be, like, I'm, like, good luck Chuck. So every single guy that I ever dated, as soon as they finished with me, the next person that they dated, they ended up either marrying or having kids with or moving in with.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I'm good luck Chuck. I've literally prepared them for the next person, like, and they should be grateful.
Yeah.
But what really was happening was I was such a shit show that anything was better than me. And the next person that they met could have literally been fucking Jack the Ripper and they'd have married them. Because anything was better than fucking dealing with my bullshit.
Of course.
But of course, for me at the time, I was like, you know, I've made them.
Yeah.
You know?
It's an ego thing, I think.
Yeah,
my
totally.
Ego is off the wall.
Can never be my fault. I've blamed every single boyfriend I ever had for all my bullshit. I just don't. Fuck. One guy actually went and fucking, he went and dated a Tory after me.
No, fuck, that's bad.
Man.
You must have been bad.
Yeah, you must have
fucking
been
fucking dated a Tory.
Yeah, that's fucking, that's
the,
like,
bar
a
is exceptionally
bomb.
Low.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The bar's fucking low. If he after me dated a Tory and I was like, well, you know, it's because I've made him such a good guy. I've shaped him, made him a better guy. He was nothing till he met me. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
There's no quite wake up call like your ex going for a Tory after you, is there?
Fuck that.
It's awful.
It's not one of you drunk.
So, like, waking up in cells, like, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like, I don't know if you found it, but nothing could really scare me off of it.
100%.
So it did not matter how I woke up, nothing was enough for me to be like, I should stop doing this. It's always like, it'll be different next time.
Aye, 100%.
Or I'll get therapy or some shit and I'll be a better person. I'll get better friends that don't piss me off when I'm drunk. I won't hang around people that trigger my anger when I'm steaming, because I was one of those people that I'm very nice, but you never really know what button it's going to be that makes me just, you're the worst person in the world. I don't know, like, when you're saying that you'd walk around slapping cunts and stuff like that, and it's everybody else's fault. Like, how did you kind of, were you ever called out on it? Did you ever, like, you know, when you woke up in the cells, wonder, like, how the fuck did I get here? What was your sort of, like, thoughts when you wake up in those scenarios?
Mm-hmm. Like, when I was younger, I was never really called out on my bullshit, because I was always the tallest. Like, I was about 6 foot by the time I was, like, 15, 16, so, like, I kind of got away with a lot of shit. And was quite intimidating at times as well, and I think, like, people were like fucking just leave him alone. But like, the police cell stuff, like, my experience with the the majority of the times waking up in police cells would be, like, I would remember leaving my house on a Friday or Saturday night. I could maybe remember a couple of drinks in two, and then I wake up on a Sunday or a Monday in a police cell. Not got a fucking clue why
just
I'm there.
Just a total blackout.
Oh, aye, it's scary. Like, in the end, when, like, I never used to think much about it. Like, what is a badge of honour for all those years? I was like, it's just fucking in the police cells. Because it was always for stupid shit, like pissing on police cars and, like, just fighting with some random and stuff. It was never in my early years. It was never anything too serious. But definitely near the end, like right before I was getting, I stopped drinking and that, it was getting to the point where I was like, this is fucking scary. I remember waking up in a police station. I was about, I think it was like the year before I stopped drinking, and I wake out of blackout, and like I can just see it's like dried blood like on my nose and stuff, and like I can see there's blood on me. And I remember like fucking getting hold of the chapping the door for the police, the buzzer to press, and he came and I was like, what have I done? Like, what am I here for? And he wouldn't tell me. He just started laughing at me. He was like, oh, you're in trouble this time. And like instantly my head goes to, I've murdered some cunt.
Oh,
that's
God.
What I went to. I could just see blood and I was shite myself. Because every experience beforehand, with the times things would go to court, I would get like fucking a stupid fine or like minimal community service and shit. It was never really too bad. And this time I'm like I'm 29, I'm like, fuck, if I've murdered somebody, like I'll fucking be in jail till my mid 40s, like till I'm like 50, and I'm like, holy shit, how do I get out of this? And it turned out like I was just fighting in the tune, and then the police came. I turned around, ran away, and I basically ran into a wall and smashed my face open. That's where the blood came from.
Oh, like, my heart is actually beating so fast.
I shit myself at the time. That's the only time I've been in a police cell where I thought, like, fuck no.
So what, did that put you off drinking, or did you just...
No, I carried on for another year, obviously. Like,
of course the
drink wasn't the problem. It was the arsehole who obviously started on me. I can't even remember it. I probably attacked him for no reason.
Imagine him ruining your night, man.
Oh, it's horrendous, isn't it? It's like, fucking, I was just having a good time, and the next thing I know, I'm in a police cell. Like, obviously, it's a lot of shite, but that's what my head would tell me at the time. It was constantly, it's not your fault. Like, just maybe go out next time and don't take a fucking quart of gear. Like, in the daytime leading up to going out, don't fucking drink a couple of bottles of Buckfast before you leave the house. Like, that's what my head would tell me. Then I'd go out again, I'd just do the exact same shit. It would quickly turn for me if you'd been in a stage where I'm like, right, I need to do something about this. Take maybe a couple of hours later, or I'd wake up the next again day, I'm like, nah, it wasn't even that bad. Like, you're actually all right. There's nothing really too wrong with you. My head would always tell me that there was nothing wrong. That it's everybody else. Like, you are brand new. You are sound. I'd like, fuck, I was homeless, right? For like a 3 month period in my early 20s, like living in bushes and graveyards. And I looked down at other homeless people because I wasn't begging out in the street and that. And I was like, I was fucking washing my face in a canal. You know what I mean? And getting all sorts of fucked up shit, stealing out of shops and that. But I wasn't as bad as them. I was brand new. Well, so my head told me. I know now I was fucking half my nut.
Yeah, we look at other people, like we were discussing this last night, and we've seen other people and being like, oh, well, I'm not that bad.
Of course.
And that's to our own detriment, because if you're always going to look for the differences, you're never going to see what's in common. And, you know, if they're like, when I think about that kind of thing, and I wonder, like, if there's anybody that's ever looked at me and been like, oh, well, I'm not as bad as her. And, you know, but what we think addiction is going to be like, or what we think it's like to be rock bottom, is never... like, there's no point. There is no measurement of rock bottom, because it's so personal. But it's funny how even in that state of mind and that low, we can still be like, your mind can convince you of anything.
Yeah, I had nothing. Like, at that point in my life, I had fuck all. And I mean nothing. I had no money, nothing. I was stealing to get by, eating, fucking getting enough money together so I could get a bottle or whatever. But like I said, I was, according to my head, I was brand new. And I was fucking, I was on the deck. And I look back now and I'm like, fuck me, that should have been a point in your life. And I was like 21, 22. It was like a long time before I actually stopped as well. That was probably the one thing in my life. It was probably the most serious thing that had ever happened. But still, it was not enough for me to be like, right, you need to do something about this now.
It's fucking mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is wild. So young.
Every time I drank, though, I used to say, it'll be different this time. Like, I'll be all right the night because I've ate something. So...
Yeah.
I've started on Prosecco. I've done, like, I'm not going out with that person, so it'll be all right the night.
Yeah.
Always ended up in heartache every single fucking time. Woke up one morning, there was mayonnaise oil on my wall because I'd flung a plate of mayonnaise.
Yeah.
And just causing it all the time. Broke my shoes and a handbag because I threw them as well when I was steaming, and like just getting into arguments with people and then not being able to face them, and like eventually you just run out of pals. can he run forever, you know?
Yeah.
And then you just stay in the house. And I done my house up because I wanted people to go, you've got a really nice house and all that. And but nobody was visiting me to even say that in the end. Like, it was fucking empty. It was dead. So it was pointless, but it would always be different next time.
Yeah, 100%. You know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
What was your progressing gradually? Do you remember the last time you drank or used? Do you remember it?
The first day is like the first day I had nothing in my system was the 11th of May, 2017. That was the first day in years, like beforehand, I'd had my last drink. I think that was a Thursday night. It would have been the night before. I think I was at the football. It was the day before or the one after. I was at a football match and a bottle and a half of Bucky doing me before I'd even got to the fucking match. But that was like my weekly routine, go to the football, a bottle of Bucky on the way down, then on the subway, a half bottle of Bucky, and then after the game, fucking Mad Dog or some shit. Whatever, really. I wasn't really fussed. I hated the taste of every alcohol, but Buckfast seemed to go down.
Did you stop everything at the one time? Or did you do
cold turkey.
Totally cold turkey? Mm-hmm. So what was your turning point? Was there like a wake-up moment, or like what happened?
I remember, when I say I remember, I don't really, I remember certain things about my last weekend. I remember finishing work on the Friday. I'd finished early, so I went out on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I was just out in town, people's houses, whatever. And like I said, it's pretty hazy. I treated somebody pretty close to me that weekend, like you wouldn't treat an animal the way you treat somebody. And I remember like where I was working at the time, like my boss was 20 years sober. He'd been sober a long, long time, and he'd been telling me for years beforehand, like, you need to, like, fucking get well, son, because he'd call me a dry drunk. He was like, I can handle you when you come in. Like, I'd go into my work, like, with 20, 30 Valium in me, a couple of joints, and he was like, I can handle you doing that, because you can get on with your shit, but when you come in here, like, off the wall, like, when not in, you're fucking a riot. And I couldn't understand it. Anyway, I went back to work on the Monday, and I remember he wanted to speak. Well, I just got told, listen, he wants to speak to you. So I went into his office, and like my arse had not even touched the seat, and he went through me like a ton of bricks. Like, what happened at the weekend somehow got back to him. I still don't know to this day how it got back to him, but it got back to him. And he just sat me down. He was like, I can't help you anymore. He went, you either continue doing what you're doing, you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose your house. Because he went, I'll sack you right now, or you go and get yourself sorted. So we gritted teeth. I just went, right, fuck it. In my head, I went, I'll do whatever I need to do for a couple of weeks until he gets off my back, and then I'll go back to my life, because of course at the time I thought I knew everything. Like, who's this fucking ex-alky?
Yeah.
Like, fucking, he's not a drinking that long, his fucking life must be fucking miserable.
Yeah.
That's what would go through my head, and like that was on the Monday, and then drank on the Tuesday. It was the Tuesday or the Wednesday, the last day. I always say my sober date's 11th, because it's the day I can actually remember.
Yeah.
Like, no having anything. Mm-hmm. But I went into recovery that day, and I've not picked up a drink or a drug since.
That's amazing.
Mm.
So what's your recovery been like?
It's been like, at the start, like, I went in and I was terrified. Like, I was the last couple of years of my using and drinking, it was like solitary. Like, I would work, use at work, then I'd be gone home, and I'd just be drinking and using in my house. Like, I was like a fucking creature, like, in the night. I was like, oh, I'd close all my curtains. Like, I was the paranoia ripping at me. It was like there was knives everywhere. like implant pots and shit, because like in my head the SAS were coming through my door because I'm that important. I was a fucking wee fanny. Like, you know, I see that now. I was so paranoid, and I just came in, and the first meeting I went to, something changed inside me. I actually went to that meeting with a bottle of Buckfast in my pocket, because I kind of knew what happened in the rooms. When I was 21, 20, I went into recovery for about 3 weeks, and I just was like, they're all fucking mental, and I fucked off. So I kind of knew what they talked about in that, and for that meeting, I just remember, I just got so much identification. I was at that point in my life where I had nothing left in me. There was no fight, no nothing. I was bust. I was on the deck. I looked all right with the clays and all that. I would always say, well, I dress all right, so I'm no fucking bad. But inside, I was dying, suicidal. It was horrendous. And then I went in and I basically done what I was told today. And the first 6 months were tremendous. Like, I couldn't speak to people, couldn't look at people in the eye. I was so shut down. And this life just appeared in front of me. I like everything. It was fucking surreal. Like, all that changed. And then I kind of got a bit complacent and went my own way. I met a lassie. That's what really happened. I was
honestly,
like,
see, there's a pint in every pair of pants.
Oh, it's fucking horrendous. Like, I totally get now why they talk about, like, give yourself a time when you first get clean. And it's maybe different if you come in a relationship, but I wasn't. I met this lassie when I was like, fucking hell, 6 weeks sober, and I kind of, I done all what was needed today, and then after I'd done it, I was like, right, thank you, stamp my card, basically, I'm off. I went and lived this life, and the 18 months until I got to 2 years sober in May there was fucking horrendous. Like, after the 6 months, my head started coming back into play. I was angry at everybody, resenting the life at fucking everybody. I was a total riot again. Getting in trouble with the police again, ending up in police cells sober, which is fucking horrendous. I'd experienced it loads of times in the madness, and thought, this is fucking, I've stayed in worse hotels.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'd done it sober for the first time, and I was like, holy fuck. Like, waking up and then getting sent to the court cells in the morning, I'm like, this is horrific. Not a bit like, so I was like a fucking over a year sober at the time, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I went on another year. I was 2 years sober there in May, and I was fucking miserable again, like really, really miserable. I attempted suicide just after a 2 year birth this year, and it fucking went tits up, obviously, and like everything else in my life. And
we've actually got the Ouija board out. I feel so we're communicating with you.
Yeah, and I picked up the phone. And I phoned somebody that I met the first meeting I ever went to, the one person I'd always kept in contact when I told them what was happening. And this guy knows me really well, and he said to me, like, James, your problem in here has always been acceptance. And I didn't get it at first, because I accept I'm an alcoholic and an addict, I always have. When I came and I realised, that just made sense. But he was like, your acceptance is in people, places and things. Anyway, he was so right. I was controlling everybody in my life, every situation. Back to that, if you do what I want you to do,
I'll be alright. Yeah.
And it was just driving me miserable, because nobody does what you fucking want them to do.
Yeah.
And I had like a 2 week period after that where I secluded myself again, and kind of looked at those 2 years in recovery. And since that day, I've just been in total acceptance of everything, and my life's fucking changed. Like, it's the best part of these last 6 months, five, 6 months. I've been the calmest part of my life. Like, nothing happens. Oh, I'm not getting angry or fuck all anymore. It's mental. It is really surreal. I don't try to control anybody. I just let everybody be who they are, even if I don't like it. It's got nothing fucking to do with me anyway. That's what I've realised. I've got no control. I've not even got control of myself at times. So why the fuck am I trying to control everybody else? I've not got a clue.
I like what you've said, because I think it's really important to know that if people are listening and stuff, that it's not just about putting down the drink. Because see, when you put that down, or you put down the coke or whatever, you're left with you. And if you don't work to get to like yourself, then you're fucked. Because I found that when I put everything down, I was like, I don't know about you. Like, looking in the mirror, like,
I cringing.
And then soberly you've got the anaesthetic and you've got all these fucking memories and flashbacks and you're trying to sleep and your head's going like that. Mind that time you shaved a square into the back of a guy's head, or mind that time you fucking broke something in somebody's house, and like all these different things keep coming up. And then it was just fucking me up, like, big time.
100%.
So, and like you were saying about not doing the work in your recovery, and then you end up being a dry drunk, I suppose.
I was worse,
like,
than when I came in the doors.
Aye.
Because I got told when I first came in, you'll realise why you drank all those years when you stopped drinking. And I was like, holy fuck, he was right. left with his head. Because the drinking, the drugs just can't, like, it calmed everything down for me. The last maybe 5 years, it wasn't working as well as it used to, but it would just take me to a level where I could leave the house.
Yeah.
And then when I stopped, I was just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
It was like demonic at times. It was really scary. I thought I lived with the devil for a long, long time. I was like, fucking, what is this? It was really bad.
I've been there, like, in that, like, exact situation with the devil. We'll leave that discussion for, like, another fucking time.
Cool.
But I feel you on a spiritual level on that one. What would you say is the biggest benefit to you? Like, why don't you tell us a bit about, like, your life now that you're sober? Like, you're saying, like, you know why you got sober and how it was difficult for you the first time around. But what's life like for you now that you've come to accept all that shit? Like, what's the benefits?
It's just peaceful. Like, I would hear things about people saying you'll get a life beyond your wildest dreams and shit like this, and I used to fucking, but first thing came to my head is I'll get the house again, or how about fucking all this money, all that shit, material shit. And I realised the day, through a lot of pain and suffering and sobriety, that for me a life beyond my wildest dreams is just peace. I wake up in the morning and there's nothing in my head. I very rarely take on a resentment for longer than 5 minutes a day, because I can't afford it. I hold on to any sort of resentment and it fucking buckles me. I'm on the flare curled up in a bar, greeting. I mean, proper greeting, because somebody's said something I don't like. And it's had to be, for me, just total acceptance. And the day I just feel, the majority of the time, in constant peace with myself, with everybody else, with life. I've got no fear about, like, I live in this moment. Like, what's been has been, even 10 minutes ago, you've got no change in it. What's going to happen in the next hour or so? Fucking deal with that when it comes. And the same with the mora. It's like, I will deal with whatever comes my way when it's there. I don't need to think about it. There's nothing, because I can think about going out to the fucking pictures or whatever shit. I don't even go to the pictures. But, and I get fucking right fucked up about it. I'm like, what am I going to wear? And like, well, that shit. So I just tend to find now, I just fucking let it come, whatever the situation is, and it's all right.
It's the piece is, like, underrated. Like, I went to Salem and I got my first tarot reading off of somebody else, a witch called Johnna Lee. Like, I'm gonna put a link to her because, like, she's good. But so that was the first reading I ever got, and the cards kind of came up like, you're still adjusting to the fact that your life isn't chaos anymore. Yeah. And I was like, bruh. Like, she was fucking right. Like, it's funny how all that noise, like, I had a noisy head. Even there weren't people in the room, but I could hear voices.
Yeah,
like,
100%.
And to know true peace, I'm like, you know that, I don't know if you're into memes, but you know that meme of John Travolta just being like, looking around like, what the fuck did I do now?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening? That was me coming to terms with the fact that my life's peaceful now. Like, it took me 100%. Months to adjust to the fact that it wasn't a shit show anymore. Yeah. And I don't know any different from that.
Aye, for the longest time, like, I still get wee days and wee bits where I'm like, I miss the chaos.
every now and then.
But I don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
I just, sometimes I think, well, I wonder what it would be like to just kick my life upside down. And then I'm like, shush. Because there's this, like, kind of good brain and bad brain that I've got that's like, I know that the good brain always overrides the bad brain now, because I can catch myself, and if I can't, I go and I share with somebody, this is what's going on in my head, is this normal? normally it's Dana, like, and I get it out, and it's a good thing that I've got that today, because I didn't have anybody that I could check my thinking with before, I was just surrounding myself by other people that were doing the exact same shit as me.
Yeah,
so
talk the same shit.
It was an echo chamber. But now that I've got that and I can check my thinking and all that kind of stuff, keeps me on the line. But I'm like, I could go some kit, and people are just like, no, you couldn't. Like, don't be thinking about fucking chaos.
100%. That's the one thing I've had. I've always, like, it's never ever since I got clean, I've never ever thought it's been a good idea to go back out. I've always had this, like, I know what it was fucking like out there.
Yeah.
Like, for me, and it was, like, horrific. It was just torture, day after day. I might as well have been in, like, solitary in the jail. Because that's what it was like up there in the Napa. It was just constant fucking, it was dementing. It was really bad, like, it was, because I'd constantly, like, fuck it, just kill yourself. I cannot take this anymore. Just kill yourself. All the time. Pain. So anything, the day, peace for me, it doesn't even need to, nothing really spectacular needs to happen for me to be peaceful. I've got what I need in my life now in regards to a job, a roof over my head and stuff like that. I've had a lot more in the past, but the new, it's just this stage where I'm just like fuck it, everything's all right.
It's about realising that life in itself is enough.
It's for living, life's for living, no for fucking greeting all the time and like thinking about the past. I constantly lived in the past or the future.
Yeah. Absolutely, like that's what I was on about with my one line war story, is I was constantly living in the past but not being aware.
Yeah, of course.
And I shared it recently in a podcast that I did, and that was like the last time I drank. My partner turned around and was like, you do realize that you do actually remember, like you're drinking to forget, but you're not forgetting it, you're reliving it.
Yeah, of course.
But I couldn't remember because I'd wake up and it would be a blackout, but every time I got drunk I was reliving it. I thought I was in the situation.
Yeah.
And it's like I could never be in the present moment until I got sober.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, that's how I get to sleep at night, is knowing I'm not wandering the streets having no idea where I am, you know. And like that is enough, just being safe,
of course,
is like sweet.
Yeah.
I think, like, see, just talking about the shit that I got up to when I was drunk, that also reminds me of, it's like, people say your past is your greatest asset.
Yeah.
Like, I believe that, because even just sharing some of the stuff that I've just shared today, it reminds me of how bad the chaos was and how much I don't want it.
Because
it's just, who the fuck wants to be running about shaving wee guys' eyebrows off?
Yeah.
It humbles us, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I get humbled frequently when I
remember
things.
I don't recognise me back then. It's like it's someone else that I'm talking about. Because I just wouldn't do any of that shit today. Not at all.
It's been like a lot of people, I've not got a lot of people in my life today that I did have in the past, because I've fucked up a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they would leave me, but there's a few people that have known me for a long time, and they're like, it's like something happened to you, because I didn't tell them the route I went down. A lot of people, I just kind of disappeared for a wee while.
So the people that you partied with and drank with, are they still in your life? Or is your friend circle
changed?
No,
because in the end, like the last 5-6 years, I was just basically, there would be one or like say a girlfriend or victim is what them is now, and like it would be her pals. And like there would be a couple of people, but I would just constantly change like my group of friends, and it wouldn't last long. I'd get like 2 nights out and they'd be like, you are off your nut, like fucking you cannot come out with us again. So it was just random people at times, walking into a pub and then spending fucking a day or two with just alkies and that.
I'd buy people drinks so that they would drink with me. So I'd end up just buying pals for the night.
100%.
And then I'd always wake up and go, how come I've spent £400? What the fuck?
Yeah,
I couldn't have drank that amount of money, and I've not even, it's not as if I went out and bought fucking gold plated chips and cheese, you know what I mean? It's fucking mental, but I used to do that, and just strangers.
Oh, aye, total randoms, aye.
I woke up with people in my house that I don't remember even talking to.
Oh, aye, definitely, aye.
Just, and they could have stole my telly. Could have been away with my fucking cats or anything, and I'm just like, come on in, have a party.
Aye. Yes, mate, I guess it was loneliness for me in the end. Because I was so lonely inside, and anybody's company was better than my fucking company. I didn't care what you looked like, if it was male or female. I did not fucking care if you would put up with my bullshit for however long length of time you were my pal for, makeup layers.
Except people that, like, if I was sober, they'd do my fucking nothing.
Aye, definitely.
But because I'm drunk and I want a drinking buddy, they'd be perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, definitely. It's fucking mental.
So what, do you have any, is there anything that you do every day or most days that keeps you sober? Have you got any routines or things that you put into your life?
I'll get up in the morning and I'll have a coffee, I'll put an incense stick on, I'll do a wee bit of meditation, I'll put a couple of prayers out there, you know, just for other people, people in general, just everybody, because I know that it's not just people like us who suffer, you know, there's people out there where, there's people out there think they're normal and they're not, that they like, we know what we suffer for the day, and there's people out there who are underneath, so I just ask for a hand for myself and all, just to get through the day, and to be like, just keep me on this path, whatever it is, keep me on it. I don't know who I'm praying to, I've not got a fucking clue, but I just do it every day, and I'll send a couple of texts out to people I've known over the last couple of years, and then I'll like have a bath and that, get ready, go to work, and phone a few folk during the day and see what's happening. It's pretty simple.
That's good.
Yeah. Just keep connected. I think that's the biggest thing you need today. Because as soon as you lose that connection, my napper comes back in. And then I'm thinking about slapping cunts again.
Yeah, I don't think the Tango advert helped either. Because I remember people running about tangoing folk.
You've been tangoed.
Orange glove. Aye, you've been tangoed. Fucking class. Mad. So do you have any tips for anybody that is starting out or struggling or maybe thinking about getting sober?
I just don't do what I did, basically. You just need to come in and just have acceptance around everything. I thought my life was over the day I stopped drinking and taking drugs, and I know the day that my life started, that was the day my life started, you know. It's all about being humble, just humble yourself. Take advice off good people who are about there, who want nothing off you apart to see you get well. You know, don't rebel, don't do any of that shit, because the only person that's going to get hurt is yourself. I went through a lot of pain there for 18 months, a lot of fucking internal pain, and it was all due to me thinking I could run the show. So just come in, get about good people, and your life will change. It's true, I was a down and out before I came in here, and it's not like that today, and if I can get it, and yous two can get it, it's here for everybody, and it's fucking free. I used to pay fortunes on psychiatrists, rip-off bastards. I never got fuck all out of it. And then I used to leave with resentments. I was like, who the fuck's this cunt? Fucking telling me what to do. Tell me when I get angry, just calm down. No, I no bother. If you think it was that simple, I wouldn't be here. Fucking idiot. And then you go into recovery, and it's honestly the best thing I've ever done for myself.
Aye, same. I went to 3 different therapists. And one guy was like, are you just really ashamed of yourself? And I was like, no, I think I'm fucking cracking. But my head's just fucked, and he just wouldn't. So I left there. Then I went to another one, which was like NHS. I waited 5 months for a woman to tell me, I don't really know what to do with you. And then I paid for therapy, and she just said the same. She was like, I don't really know what to do. You seem to know yourself quite well. You've got everything really figured out. But, you know, it wasn't until I stopped drinking and I get around people that were also sober, sober-minded, that I realised that I didn't actually know fuck all about myself. I didn't know who I was, what I liked. I was just a chameleon. And, you know, if you like that, I like that, because I just wanted you to be my pal. And, it was just ridiculous. Yeah. And I just surrounded myself with similar people. But, yeah, I would say, I think you're right. I'd echo what you're saying is get around sober people. Get around people that don't want anything off you.
Yeah.
There's no benefit to them. Get around people as well that don't fucking offer you coke when you stop drinking.
Yeah.
We'll just do gear then. Well, no!
It needs to be everything for me. It was... I was late at the start. I'll just get off the drugs. I'll still drink, because drinking's not the problem. And I soon realised, no, it has to be. I couldn't have stayed sober. I couldn't have done it. It's got to be a total abstinence.
There's no controlling it for me.
No.
Because as soon as I hit that switch, I'm on. There's no a wee bit on or nearly on or on, but I can turn. I'm not turning that off until I fall asleep.
Ah, of course.
I need to fodden before I'm going to be putting a drink down. So, madness. What about you, Dana? Have you got any tips?
I was just thinking about what you were saying about therapy and stuff. I got therapy for 3 years, and I was very conscientious about it. Like, I was so desperate for help that I was like taking notes and shit, reading the books that she read. I was doing everything, but it didn't make me a better drinker at the end of the day. So I don't know. Like I say, everybody, like, I don't know, for me to drink is to die. I'll drink when I'm ready to die, but it's not today. And you know, it's I know I'm so fucking bleak, man. Like, I'm a happy person, I promise. I don't sell this, but why is everything I do a train wreck, man?
Why? You're funny. You're so funny.
Yeah.
When I think it's something that you should at least try.
Yeah.
Like, if I think about trying to convince myself back then, nobody is going to convince you to stop what you're doing except you. It's the only self-diagnosed illness. How much are you willing to lose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why? I think it's a good thing to try. You know, come for the experience and stay for the results. It's kind of... Even if it's just out of curiosity, like, just don't do it today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you're just
if you think about it for the rest of your life, like, no cunt's going to want to be sober for the rest of their life. But
I can stay sober the day. Because otherwise we're just playing chicken with our lives.
If I was going with, like, solid advice that is, like, absolute basics and should be followed by everybody, it's, like, do not fucking hang around with people that are still doing what you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go into bars and think that you're going to be fine, because you might not. I've done it, and it's just, like, so unpleasant. But there is no pain like an alcoholic having just one drink.
Yeah.
I've been through some painful things in life, and nothing has been worse than pretending I'm okay with one drink.
Yeah.
If you know you're not okay with one drink, don't do it. Just don't do it. Avoid it.
And, like...
That's my advice, anyway.
Like, if it said to me, if you sit in the hairdressers long enough, you're going to end up with a haircut.
Yes.
So, stay the fuck out of wet places.
Yeah. Just don't do it. Just don't go.
Keep sober company. And when you're saying you're going to give it a give it an actual chance, don't stop for a week and go, I'm okay.
Brand new.
Fucking, I get it, but talk to someone.
You see people change their life. Like, that's been my experience. And people who have, like, it is, you see people transform for right in front of you.
Mm.
I never seen it in myself. Other people did, but I can see it in people, like, who come in absolutely ruined.
Sure.
And sometimes it only takes a couple of weeks, a couple of months, and these people are like, you're like, what the fuck happened there?
Yeah.
What a difference it makes, though, isn't it? Like, in such a short period of time, like, people don't get that, you know, you just need to get past that wee hard bit, and then the sun comes up, and it's fucking beautiful. Like,
that's fantastic at times. There's stuff happened to me I can never explain, or due to be getting clean and sober, and it's like, I would never have. Like, it's a life beyond my wildest dreams of day, definitely.
Absolutely. So is there anything that you want to pimp or plug, or there's a charity that you were
saying? I work for, like, a homeless charity called MAS. We pick up donated furniture, basically sell it in the shops, and then the money goes into the charity. It's like a homeless charity, which is good, but also to plug yous to.
Do yous take collections for people for winter? You know, like, winter blankets and things like that?
Have done at times, like, it's more like they'll furnish people's houses as well, who, like, are just at the jail and shit like that.
Mm.
And, like, people who have just got a house, like, have been homeless, because, like, you just get a house nowadays with fuck all in it.
Mm. Aye.
They just give you keys to a house. And there's fuck all in it, so we help folk out in ways like that.
That's amazing. So that's EMMAUS.
Aye.
So if they get a website?
Yes, I do not know what it is, but if you type,
I'll add a link onto the description.
If you just type in Glasgow after that, you'll get what you need to know.
So EMMAUS. So if anybody's getting any donations, or they want to chuck a bit of money in the pot, or if they want to help out with furnishing somebody's house that needs it,
give us a shout.
Yeah, that would be good. Or if you want to buy some cool fucking furniture.
Oh, aye, there's some cracking furniture. Like, I see some of the stuff in your house, like, is I've picked up stuff very similar to it.
Like, old antique stuff?
Get some cracking stuff. I used to think charity shops were just fully shiting for Jakey's, but it's not the case.
Oh, I love a charity shop.
I found chairs in the street and I brought them in. And it turns out they're Parker Noel armchairs, and they're worth a bit of grand each. So fucking
happy days.
A lot to be said for old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, what else were you going to put?
I just used to. What I say is, it's this is a, like, I met you last week.
You try to pimp me, or like, aye, the, I prefer the podcast. Being trafficked, thank you.
Aye, the podcast, and you told me about this podcast, and like I said, I was wired to it for like the first 2 days. Like, I rattled through it. I got so much identification, and it's like, it's a really good thing if there was something like this about when I was at the point where I was like, in the end, like, I probably would have got cleaner and sober, like, a lot quicker. Like, this is going to help a lot of people. And
you are
for where you are at, like, Dana, here as well this weekend. It's a big achievement, I know. It's class, and you should be proud of yourself. But it's like, this will probably help a lot more people than you ever realise. Because it helped me down the line, and you're really tremendous. I'm glad. So much love.
So fucking wholesome.
I think the next podcast we need to do has got to be Dana's. I want to interview you, Dana. Just you. I want all your tea, and I want to know about like what your tips are for getting to a year. What you've learned in a year, like. This will be your big 1 year birthday share.
I still can't really believe it. You know?
I'm buzzing for it. Yeah. I'm fucking buzzing.
Cannot believe it.
I want to pimp something. And what I want to pimp is I'm doing, along with Icebox, which is down at the Gorbals. So if you know where the big vampire mural is at the Gorbals, you go straight down High Street, you take a right at the lights, and you'll see the big vampire mural. And to the left of that, there is an industrial estate. And the first unit in that is the Icebox. You can find them on Facebook. And on the 8th of December, we're doing a men's mental health day. And it's only for guys. There's going to be food there. There's going to be burlesque. So there'll be fucking tits. Yes.
Woohoo. Yes.
There'll be raffles. A raffle with some prizes. Like, there'll be like a full day at the football, full hospitality, meet the manager and all that kind of stuff. And other things there as well. There's going to be speakers on, which will be covering some real topics. A couple of the guys have been on the podcast, so if you're familiar with the podcast, then you'll know the guys that are going to be on there. There'll be somebody talking about suicide and the signs that you might not spot in your friends or that you might miss. How to ask somebody if they're suicidal, and, you know, more importantly, because this is a major barrier for most people, but what to do if they say yes. Because that's the main thing that stops people asking in the first place. So please get along to it, donate what you can. We're suggesting £6 on the door, but if you can't afford that, we're not going to stop you coming in. There'll be curry and chips at half time. There'll be entertainment later on as well. It's on from 3 o'clock until about 10 o'clock or whenever we get kicked out. And it's on the 8th of December, Sunday the 8th of December. I'm sorry it's on the cup final day. I did not fucking foresee that getting announced. But if you can come along before or after, I'd be absolutely delighted to have you there. But again, it's men only. We can put on a women's one down the line, but men have got the biggest suicide rate in Scotland, in fact in Europe. And especially in Glasgow. So this is something that we really need to eat, and we're going to keep doing this until that starts coming down. Yeah. Dana, anything to pimp? I nearly said punt and pimp, and I was going to say pump.
Have I got anything to pump?
I felt it coming. Anybody pump, Dana?
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I do not. Except that Epstein didn't kill himself. Anyway, you've been listening to AFIT. Tweet us,
Instagram is, Facebook is. Give us some one-line war stories, because we're missing that shit.
Spill the fucking tea.
Spill the fucking tea. And wish Dana the happiest of happy birthdays. It's on Sunday. You'll have heard this by then. But yeah, and look out for our next show and listen to the other ones and come to the thing. Cool. Bye.
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 I forgot that.